Peter King here, reminding you to subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Peter King, as well as the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer and the 10 Things MMQB podcast.
All right, week four is in the books. Julio Jones was an unstoppable machine in Atlanta. Someone finally reigns on the Patriots' backup quarterback parade. The Raiders just keep winning, and the Steelers get back on track and then some. All that and so much more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I am here with Andy Benoit. And Andy, we saw a pretty wild week four here. A couple of absolutely superhuman performances. And on top of that, a couple of early season stories that sort of came back down to earth. A couple of reality checks here, but pretty interesting week going down here.
Yeah, and a couple of good games, contested games down to the last minute, which is nice. We haven't had, it feels like we haven't had quite as many of those in the NFL, at least not since week one. But the games I saw today were entertaining all the way through, except for the Sunday night game. But that's, you know, hey, it's nice to catch a break sometimes on those late hour games, too.
After 14 consecutive hours of football, it was nice of the Chiefs to just sort of not show up in the first
game. That's exactly how I felt about it. Yep.
But we're actually going to start in Atlanta with topic one here. Julio Jones had the one catch outing last Monday night against the Saints. Today, he just reminded everyone that he is maybe not quite human. However, maybe the Panthers' D is, well, quite human this year. But we'll start with Jones, sixth player ever to record 300 receiving yards in a game. He obviously broke out in a very big way. The Falcons' offense is cooking. They knocked off the Panthers, and they are in first place in the AFC South. I mean, this is kind of what Julio Jones does, and now that the Falcons are a little more diversified with what they're doing offensively, it seems like they are going to be for real in the AFC South.
NFC South, I think you mean, but yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, although they could win that AFC South, too, just by being in the NFL. Just a general default champion is going to have to be named in that division, it looks like. Team.
We'll get to that later, because I'm going to throw my hat in the ring in for a AFC South title as well.
Okay, very good. Julio Jones, understand what he does so well, because it really matches up for attacking Carolina's defense, and it matches up within the context of Atlanta's offense. Julio Jones, he does everything well, of course, but the strength of his game are in-breaking routes, so slant patterns, post patterns, anything where he can use his big body mixed with his quickness out of his breaks or into his breaks. If he runs a route vertically and changes directions and goes inside of you, that's borderline unstoppable given his frame and his speed.
Yeah.
And Carolina's zones can be vulnerable to that, especially if you incorporate play action. They play a cover three zone in Carolina for the most part, which is your most basic zone. So those underneath linebackers are the guys responsible for taking away those in-breaking routes. The cornerback has to play on the outside of the receiver in cover three. So if you can manipulate the linebackers, and Atlanta's done a tremendous job of that all season long because they have such a good zone running game, and zone runs naturally match up to play action extremely well, and Atlanta's done a tremendous job all year. That's a great formula for going against the Panthers, and then factor in that this Atlanta team saw Carolina twice last year in their offense. So everybody knows how to play and what they want to do, and stylistically, Atlanta matches up well to that Carolina defense.
Yeah, and you know, Jones went for 9 for 178 when they knocked off the Panthers in Week 16 last season. Obviously, the Panthers only a regular season loss. This was kind of the first week of the year that you sort of saw the Panthers and said, like, maybe the secondary not holding together quite as well. James Bradbury had been doing a nice job. He is, you know, he's obviously not the only new piece on that defense, but he's kind of the guy. And he's wearing number 24, which I find very strange. And I don't know if that's unwise on his part, or maybe he just liked 24. I feel like I think he wore like 21 in college or something at Samford. But you know, this was the first week where you sort of said like, oh, Dave Gettleman, what's going on here, buddy?
Well, they're down to 1-3 now, and it's an ugly 1-3. It's not like they've had weird things happen and they're just on the wrong end of the stick a few times. They've played Minnesota last week and played their style of offense in Carolina and got totally dismantled by the Vikings, who played their style of defense. Carolina's a vertical passing team, and if those vertical routes don't get open, if you can throw off the timing of those vertical routes early in the down, you can expose that Carolina offensive line. And that's exactly what happened a week ago, and they're built to overcome that. They play extra guys in pass protection to avoid that kind of thing, and the Vikings, similar to what the Broncos did, actually the Falcons started it last year, have exposed the Panthers a little bit by bringing more pressure, by forcing the offensive line into one-on-one matchups. And then the other part of all this, Gary, is Cam Newton's not playing well right now. He looks more like the Cam Newton of 2014 than 2015. We're seeing some of the lack of discipline with the pocket mechanics again, which leads to the inaccuracy issues. And the decision-making has been a beat off at times. It's easy to say this when a team's 1-3, I know.
Yeah.
But he's not been as sharp overall as he was last season.
I mean, look, they went six quarters without an offensive touchdown here, starting second quarter of the Vikings game, and they didn't score an offensive touchdown until the fourth quarter today, when they were down 24 points at that point. And obviously, Cam got knocked out of this game as well, got a nasty hit on a two-point conversion. Derek Anderson comes in and leads the attempted comeback that falls short, but lots of problems in Carolina right now. They are obviously not the team they were a year ago, and you know, they are now basically 2.5 back of the Falcons in the AFC South, and they have some work to do. Fortunately for them, no one else in the AFC or excuse me the NFC South the NFC South is the division they play in. No one else in the NFC South is very good, but the Falcons sort of poised to run away with this, maybe, if they can hold on as the schedule gets a little bit tougher for them here. But
I don't think they have the kind of pass rush where you could ever say they're poised to run away with it. It's early. It's one let's say they lose two games in a row, which is entirely possible. They're 3-3 then. It's early. I would tap the brakes on Atlanta, but that offense looks very good.
Exactly. We'll just say this. Their defense wasn't very good last year either. The offense also wasn't very good last year. Matt Ryan struggled last year, but Matt Ryan is not struggling right now. They are humming pretty good on offense. But we will jump ahead here to topic two. We'll go to New England, and this is what it's supposed to look like when you start your third-string quarterback. The Patriots shut out for the first time since 2006. Jacoby Brissett ended up under center for a second straight start, and the Bills sort of jumped out early in this one. Patriots had to play catch-up, which is not how you want to play when you have a limited playbook with your rookie quarterback. And this was not... it was 16-0, but it was never really... it never felt like the Patriots were in this game. I don't know. I guess you can pretty much burn this one if you're New England, because as of midnight Monday morning, Tom Brady was reinstated to the team.
And I kind of get the sense that the attitude is, hey, 3-1, we'll take that. That's good. And they have a bye week coming up now, and Gronkowski probably gets healthier after the bye, and here you go. The Texans did not have any film on Jacoby Brissett, and it was a short week, which doesn't help either side. And so New England came out and did things no one had ever seen. Buffalo had a chance to prepare differently for them, and that's what happened. I think overall, there's not a person who's followed the NFL this year that wouldn't say, hey, New England's right where they want to be. If you told them this is where they'd be back in August at this time of year, if you said it back then, I think they would have jumped on that.
Yep. Yeah, 3-1 with Brady coming back here. A couple of dumb little things in this game. Robert Blanton got into a shoving match with Brissett, or I shouldn't call it a shoving match. It was more Robert Blanton, one of the Bills' safeties, shoved Jacoby Brissett as he jogged onto the field during warmups. Jonathan Kraft took a shot at Rex, which, I don't know.
None of that stuff matters. None of that matters.
Kraft's quote was, goes back to Rex. That's why Rex is Rex, and that's why Bill is Bill. And it just added a little bit of extra flavor to this. I don't know why Jonathan Kraft wants to get involved in this whole, in the Rex Ryan war of words type of thing. But Rex gets his win today. And one thing I noticed that that the Bills did offensively was they seemed to, early in the game, go right after Logan Ryan. They sort of, you know, they had Charles Clay split out wide a couple times, and they attacked Ryan. Ryan ended up with 17 tackles, and only 5 of them were in run support in this game, which is not a very good sign.
Tyrod Taylor's looked a lot more comfortable, too, with Anthony Lynn calling the games. And the one thing we've heard, we never know how things go in the meeting rooms with these coaches, but what we've heard is Lynn was going to pare down the playbook and simplify things, or not simplify, but just reduce. And in the reduction, that probably feels simpler to Tyrod Taylor. He's looked a lot calmer. He has a tendency to play fast in the pocket mentally, which is odd because the guys that play fast come out looking slow when they play. They hold the ball, but their minds are going fast, their eyes, their helmets are moving fast. Taylor's kind of been one of those guys. He's not a naturally pocket-timed player, yeah. And that has been ameliorated a little bit since they've changed the offensive coordinator, so he looks more comfortable.
Yep, and look, they're doing it without Sammy Watkins, too.
They're going to have to keep doing that.
Yep, for the foreseeable future, if not the entire season. But some big tests coming up for the Bills. We'll see if this whole thing is sustainable with Anthony Lynn calling the plays and sort of doing some nice things with Tyrod Taylor in the early going.
Hey, but Gary, can I say one more thing?
Yeah, of course you can, Andy.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm glad. Good. I feel like I'm on the show and I get to participate. Rex Ryan was on the quote-unquote hot seat 2 weeks ago, or at least that's what we don't know if he was, but that's what everyone was saying, right? And since then, they've gone and beaten the Arizona Cardinals, one of the best coached teams in the league, and then they went into New England and shut them out. And mm-hmm. that Bills defense has looked like Rex Ryan's defense again. They were very vanilla the first 2 weeks of the season. They didn't blitz those first few weeks. They didn't show a lot of blitz looks. That has not been the case, especially against Arizona. They were very diverse. Safeties blitzing, which is a big staple of Rex Ryan's. It was neat to see them reassume his identity. And I think that a lot of credit needs to be given to a coach where you're facing two teams that were in the championship last year. You're 0-2. Everyone's got wanting your head on a stake, and you go out and win the game with a very average defensive group of guys, by the way, and you do it playing your style. That's tremendous coaching.
Well, so many new faces too, and you wonder how much first 2 weeks of the season you're going to hold back just because you have so many new guys, and they're not necessarily the new guys you wanted in your lineup. So
yeah.
You know, it's kind of that, it fits that Rex Ryan persona, that kind of, you know, they had nothing left to lose, so why not just go out the way you're going to play? But good things happening in Buffalo. Always good things happening in Buffalo, but now good things happening for the Bills. See what I did there, Andy?
Nope. I'm sorry.
Let's just jump ahead then.
I have no idea what you just did there.
Western New York is a wonderful place.
Well, yeah, you bring that up every. I didn't know we were. Is that like becoming a thing on the show now? Is that a running theme?
If you catch up to speed, it could, Andy.
All right, I like Western New York as well. Topic three.
Topic three. Raiders come east and get 2 wins. Is this team ready for a breakthrough? All sorts of excitement today. Back and forth game with the Ravens. Derek Carr leads the scored with a little less than 2 minutes ago, but he leads a late drive, needed a touchdown. They get the touchdown. Nice, drops in a nice throw to Michael Crabtree on a little out and up. And the Raiders moving in the right direction. They're 3-1 right now. Wins in Tennessee, a win in Baltimore today. What have you seen from this team, Andy? And is this team realistically ready for that breakout everyone expected them to have this year?
Well, there's reason for optimism because this team is 3-1. They've gone to the East Coast 2 weeks in a row, or at least the Eastern time zone 2 weeks in a row, East Coast this week, and won in the early window game as well. That's always an achievement. And so you have a team that's 3-1 under those conditions, and when you watch their film, they really have not played very well on by their standards, by what they want to be. I think they haven't played very well on either side of the ball yet. Hmm. David Carr has been up and down in terms of accuracy this season. The offense had the points today, but a lot of them came on a short field that were set up by turnovers that the defense created or other circumstances. So that offense did not move the ball at will up and down against a good Raven defense. They still don't know what they want at running back. Latavius Murray's getting pushed into a rotational role, and they're trying to sort out who gets the carries and when they're doing that. It's an offense that's just not as sharp as it could be. And then defensively, it was just 2 weeks ago that Atlanta lit them up. And Atlanta, we talked about, remember, Gary, how they would align in condensed formations and beat the Raiders in the middle of the field. The week before, the Saints had lit them up by beating them on the perimeter, spreading out. And the defense had gotten beat in every imaginable way. They've made changes at linebacker and safety. So right up at the middle of the field there, Carl Joseph's in the lineup now. Another rookie, Corey James, is in there at middle linebacker. He's been up and down, but that's better than what they were getting from Ben Heaney. Yeah. Overall, though, it's a defense with questions in the middle of it still, and an offense that's not as super sharp, and yet here they are at 3-1.
Mm-hmm. No, 261 yards of offense today, and counter that with they picked up 12 penalties. So this was not this was not a beautiful game on either side, and it ended ugly. And we've talked a couple times on the show about officiating and the emphasis on celebration, cracking down on celebrations and taunting penalties, and there was the one on Terrell Pryor a couple weeks ago that had everyone riding the streets. But Mike Wallace picked up the dumbest taunting penalty I've ever seen today. And it was all his fault. It was so clearly a penalty the way they've been calling it. He caught a two-point conversion that was largely a meaningless two-point conversion because they were up four and they were moving it from four to six.
Yeah.
Which, Raiders, it's just in case they missed the extra point is right. What it was going to factor in with. But so Mike Wallace catches the two-pointer and sort of spikes the thing right on the defender and picks up the 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, and I don't know how you get that fired up over a largely meaningless two-point conversion anyway, but those ended up being big yards, and maybe the Raiders move the ball all the way to the end zone anyway, but they certainly didn't need to give them any help at that point.
And it's too bad, too, with Mike Wallace, because he's looked very good this season, and this is the first time we've talked about him on the podcast. I thought he's looked good on film the first 3 weeks, but we haven't brought him up yet, and now this is the first people have heard of Mike Wallace from us.
Sorry, Mike Wallace. Shouldn't have done that dumb thing at the end of the game.
No question.
Yeah. He is having a nice bounce-back season, though. Nice comeback player there, Mike Wallace.
And I think that whole Ravens offense, they're 3-1 as well. They're in a good spot. Breshad Perriman's going to get better, or at least it's presumable. Wallace will get more comfortable in Mark Trestman's system, and he appears to fit the system well. Steve Smith coming off the Achilles will figure he gets more comfortable, and he's looked pretty good. Dennis Pitta hasn't played in 2 years. All these guys are likely to get better as the season goes along, and it looks like they've found their running back in Terrence West, so the zone running game will bounce back. There's a lot of people in Baltimore worried right now. Hey, what's up with the offense? I think that's an intriguing group, and I think it's a good a system that really fits the personnel they have. They're just waiting for the personnel to now fit into it, and that personnel is going to get more comfortable. I think the Ravens are a team.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, who would have thought they would get anything at this point from Steve Smith and Dennis Pitta? Those are two guys that I had pretty much written off at this point, considering their age and their injury factors coming into the year. But so Ravens dropped to 3-1, still doing all right, though. We'll move on to topic four, and this is the Sunday Nighter, which got out of hand very quickly in the rain in Pittsburgh. I don't know what to say about this game, Andy. This was, the Steelers have a recent history of bouncing back well off of losses. Last week's loss in Philadelphia was as bad as it gets, and tonight was pretty much as good as it can go, though they certainly got lots of help from a sloppy Chiefs team who just sort of slipped around in the rain, and nothing.
Some games are like that. Some games go that way. Steelers had a game like that themselves the week before. It's interesting because Philadelphia is the one team that's closest stylistically to Kansas City. Doug Peterson runs the same offense that Andy Reid runs. And against Philadelphia, the Steelers' defense was what it had been in weeks one and two, which was very vanilla. In fact, they blitzed in weeks one, two, and three. They blitzed less than any team in the NFL, which is astounding to me, and I think to anyone who knows coordinator Keith Butler on defense, that they would play that way. So they were very basic. They disguise a zone and rotate into cover two or cover three, and you knew what you were getting, it seemed like. They went against the Chiefs, and they did not play that way so much, at least not early on. The game gets out of hand, so you're going to play that way a little more. But when the game wasn't out of hand, when you see in the first few possessions what the game plan looks like, they were back to being the Steelers. Inside pressure concepts, zone blitzes where it looks like you're bringing pressure, guys are dropping out, but you're still influencing blockers. A lot more complex overall, and I wonder if they're getting comfortable with their secondary, those young guys. We've talked about how it's hard to play in the Steelers system if you're a young player, and rookie corners don't play, rookie safeties generally don't, but they have this year with Artie Burns and Davis, and maybe they're getting more comfortable with those guys. Davis didn't play in this one. I don't know, but I was really interested in what the Steelers did. They looked like the Steelers to me again on defense. Offense, too. They went back to the spread formations now that Le'Veon Bell's back and Marcus Wheaton looks fully healthy. So they're a spread formation offense team again. They'll still take their shots, and they're a blitz-happy defense. And that's the formula that a lot of us who picked them to go to the Super Bowl, that's what we were banking on.
Yeah. Yeah, they did some cool stuff with Le'Veon Bell. They had Bell and D'Angelo Williams on the field at the same time with basically Antonio Brown as the only other receiver, if I remember correctly. And then Bell basically split out as the number two receiver. And they got him matched up on Derek Johnson a couple times. And they did some neat things. But I wanted to ask you about one play in particular, Andy. Because I when this happened, all I could picture was you, sipping your ginger ale in front of Sunday Night Football and just doing a complete spit take when you saw this. But you had written the piece saying, on the MMQB this past week, you'd written the piece saying, team should stop testing Marcus Peters because he's become so instinctive and his ball skills are so good. And very first play of the game, Steelers go play action and chuck it downfield, Sammy Coates on Marcus Peters. And it... weirdly underthrown ball, but Coates adjusts to it, and I thought of you, Andy.
Well, I appreciate that, because you can also bring up a few weeks before I wrote that Sammy Coates has a lot to work on his deep routes, because he truncated two deep routes in the game against the Bengals, and they paid the price on both of those. Obviously, they're going to take their shots with Coates. They've done that every week, and he's shown that, A, he's fast, and B, he can win on 50-50 balls along the sideline. So that's something they do. It's going to be Coates on deep shots, Antonio Brown on deep posts or deep corner routes, and that's the formula. So play single high safety against the Steelers very lightly and tread lightly on that, because they'll go after you. And, yeah, as far as Marcus Peters goes, I would not throw at him when he's in off coverage. I would avoid that. But if you run a guy on a nine route against him just straight downfield, he's not in off coverage then. And that does become 50-50. And worst case, Peters intercepts it, and it's like you punted on first or second down or something. So that is a flaw in his game. He's not flawless against certain patterns, and that was one of them. Houston got him a few times as well, more on double moves the week before, but where he's most dangerous is as a zone off coverage type corner, more off coverage man type corner.
Yeah. Well, this one got out of hand quickly. Steelers win it 43-14, get back on track. The Chiefs can kind of do what the Steelers did a week ago and just sort of give up on that that game and move forward. All right, Andy, hang on 1 second before we go on to topic five. You know, everyone out there, you've been watching the games 4 weeks now in the books, and let's face it, it gets a little bit redundant. You know, maybe you want to do something that, as the saying goes, makes things a little more interesting. Well, get in the action and play like the pros at MyBookie.net. It's the most exciting online experience for sports fans. MyBookie features real Vegas odds and incredible player props on every game. Did the game already kick off? MyBookie has live in-game with odds updated in real time. Never too late to make a play, and they're optimized for smartphone users for nonstop action on the go. Go online, type MyBookie into your browser, and sign up today. Use promo code 10THINGS, that's 10THINGS, to be entered into their $1 million prize pool, or call 844-722-2387. Join the thousands of online players already playing. Only the biggest, only the best, only at MyBookie. Sign up today. All right, topic five. Trevor Siemian is out. Sprained AC joint in his non-throwing shoulder. Probably going to miss maybe a week. Might even play next week, but sounds like he's going to miss a week, maybe two. Paxton Lynch, the rookie, steps in, though in the end, does this really matter? Because it seems like no one is ever going to do anything of note against the Broncos defense.
Well, that Broncos defense is facing the Falcons offense in their next game. So if ever there were a test, that would be it, because there's not an offense that's clicking on more cylinders right now than Atlanta's.
Well, up in the thin air, we'll see. We'll see what goes on there. But yeah, the Broncos just basically did whatever they wanted in Tampa today. Jameis had an early rushing touchdown, but this one got out of hand soon after that. Aqib Talib, a couple of interceptions. I had forgotten Aqib Talib played for Tampa Bay. And when they said that on the telecast, I was like,
yeah.
I was like, that's not right. And I was like, oh,
well,
wait.
He was a good player for Tampa Bay. He was a first round pick for him, and a productive one at that. So yeah, he had a nice few years there in Tampa.
All right. Andy, going on to topic six. We have the Los Angeles Rams, first place in the NFC West. They go to Arizona and get the win. They are 3-0 since that opening night, Monday night, late night meltdown in San Francisco, which by the way, the Vikings also did that to start last season.
Right.
They got their butts handed to them in San Francisco in that late game. But yeah, the Rams 3-1, and you know, as it stands now, they also have that tiebreaker over Seattle, so things are turning pretty well for Case Keenum and company.
And you mentioned Case Keenum. This is a team, it's kind of like the Raiders a little bit, where it's more extreme, actually, where we talked about, hey, they're 3-1 and they really haven't played well on all cylinders yet. That offense is not a good offense. They don't run the ball effectively. Their offensive line struggles to get off of double teams, which means that they can't get linebackers blocked. Todd Gurley, I'm not talking today, I'm just talking how their films looked for the first quarter of the season. Todd Gurley has nowhere to run, and so they're relying on the passing game. The passing game has nobody that can create inherent mismatches. Tavon Austin doesn't fit their style of offense. They try to make him work, but he doesn't. So it's a very flawed offense, and yet here they are at 3-1, and as the season goes on, the offense will become less flawed. You're not going to get worse than what you are. This is what you are. You're going to get better playing within it. It's not like you have weaknesses that are yet to be exposed. Teams know how to defend you. I think Rob Boris, their offensive coordinator, has done a very good job of overcoming this, because when you have a flawed group, when you have a QB that's not very accurate at times, or not strong-armed when he's throwing outside the numbers, and when your O-line can't run block consistently, you really have to manufacture plays through the air. You have to win with your play designs. And Boris has done that a number of times each week. And they haven't always produced because the players haven't executed. But the play calling, I think, has been not perfect, but certainly very good, because it's overcome some of the talent deficiencies there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was about the big play today. They had Brian Quick with a 65-yard run and catch. Sorry, catch and then run. He caught it and then he ran. 65-yard touchdown. They had a long punt return by Tavon Austin, set up their second touchdown. And obviously, the defense is carrying them right now. You know, Aaron Donald had a couple of huge plays today. Carson Palmer struggling again. I don't know. What's going on with Carson Palmer, Andy?
Yeah, it might be time to look a little closer at that. I got asked about that quite a bit last week, just doing radio spots. And they got destroyed by Buffalo, and they played from behind. I think they were 3-and-out their first 5 possessions in that game. They were playing from a hole the whole time. They were not on time. They were out of sync. I obviously haven't seen the film on this one yet, but it's a very that's a time-based offense. That's about hitting the receivers at the top of their routes, and those routes are very precision-oriented. So if the timing gets off with the offense, and if teams are figuring out how to do that, that can be a problem. I'll tell you what the Bills did, because it's my guess is it's similar to what the Rams are going to look like on film for this one. The Bills presented Palmer with one look early in the snap and then played a different look later in the snap. And so he had to process a little bit more, and that is what threw off the timing. And then some of that, and within that flow of things, sometimes the pressure did get home. And interestingly, I mentioned earlier, the Bills, how they do that with safeties. They'll bring their blitzes with safeties. The Rams are similar. They like Mark Barron's their linebacker. He's basically a safety. So they've got extra speed at weird positions on the field. Your safety positions, your miscellaneous linebacker positions. They're fast in weird areas on that Rams defense, just like the Bills can be fast in weird areas. Yeah. And that's what the problem was for the Cardinals passing game last week. I don't know if that was this week or not, but if that's the case, then maybe you hate to say the word blueprint, but that could be a good thing for other teams to look at as far as how to disrupt the timing of that passing game.
The Cardinals won touchdown drive today. They had a tremendous 2-minute drive at the end of the first half. They went 80 yards, 8 plays in a minute 24, and it kind of lends to your theory. You know, when they were in a situation where they were going fast and you know, the defense can't necessarily do exactly what they want to do as they scramble to keep up with the offense.
Yep.
I mean, that might have created that drive, because they did nothing other than that. And then Palmer concussed late in the game. Drew Stanton came in, and, you know, the futility continued until the final whistle there. But
that's a great point you made, Gary, too, is maybe Arizona wants to go fast more often to dictate the terms, because if disguises are an issue,
yeah,
then the defense can't disguise in the hurry up. There's not enough time to organize a disguise, or at least it's a lot more difficult. That's a good point you make. And Arizona does so many empty formations where there's only 5 linemen protecting and everyone else goes out in a route. If that's the case and defenses know you play that way, then your protections can get manipulated by those disguises, because you know where you always know where the pass protectors will be. They're going to be in their offensive line slots.
Yeah. Yep. Well,
Rams, isn't it interesting how fine a line there is, too, between, we've always said the good teams and bad teams, they always look the same on film for the most part. There's not a huge difference. The Rams don't have new players, and neither do the Cardinals, and it's the Rams that are 3-1 this year playing their style, and the Cardinals 1-3 playing their style from last year.
No, look, and the Cardinals could have won week one if they weren't running a converted running back out there at cornerback. And look, they could have won today if, you know, couple of those, you know, the Brian Quick touchdown was a little bit fluky. They give up the big punt return. I mean, there's really been, I mean, look, on top of that, week one, if they get a snap, hold, and kick down correctly, they win the game anyway. So you're talking about a team that is literally 2 or 3 plays away from being 3-1. Instead, they're sitting at 1-3. Short week. They're going out to San Francisco for the Thursday nighter, which was promoted really obnoxiously all week, but should be interesting to see what they do and what they're going to do if they don't have Carson Palmer.
Yeah, but and that's a Niners defense. I guess it's a whole different staff, or largely different now, but the Niners last year at times did a pretty good job of matching up to the Cardinals. They've really made the Cardinals earn their yards, we'll see if Jim O'Neill, who's their D coordinator, O'Neill's trying to still figure out what he has in San Francisco. I don't know if he quite is fully comfortable with all his pieces yet, but it's at least the players he has have seen that Cardinals offense before, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's go topic 7. We're going to stay out west. This was Drew Brees returns to San Diego, and the Chargers figure out an exciting new way to lose a game. I don't know how the Chargers lost this game.
it was just ridiculous. I watched it, and my storyline depended on the Saints winning, and so I had to cancel my plans for the afternoon or the evening, I guess. And it might be the most gifted I've ever seen, at least in the last few years. I don't remember a team that handed the win away like that as blatantly as the Chargers did. They had back-to-back fumbles deep in their own or within their own territory to give the Saints a possession. And then when that led to them falling behind by 1 after they'd been up by 13, And following that, they had a shotgun snap on second down when Phillip Rivers wasn't ready. He was changing the call or changing the play or something, and the Matt Slauson mistook the situation and snapped it. Now you got third and 22. Rivers made an unbelievable deep cover two window outside throw, like that little window that opens up along the sideline in cover two. He nailed Dante Inman
right in the helmet.
Yeah, and it was a drop. So more bad hands issues, bad hands, bad snaps, and the game was absolutely lost. That was one that was lost, not won by the Saints. Drew Brees didn't even play particularly well.
Yeah. Now, I said this one was the equivalent of a remember the old we always talk about NBA on this podcast, but remember the old Reggie Miller against the Knicks, the famous comeback in the playoffs.
When you're talking about the 8 points in 8 seconds?
Yeah. That was this. That was giving away two fumbles in deep in your own territory at that point in the game. And the second one, you know, the term lost fumble is a little, it can be a little bit misleading because often the ball's ripped out of your hands. You can't really do anything about it. But Travis Benjamin lost a fumble. He caught the ball and he turned and he wasn't touched and he just dropped it. And that was it.
Yeah, that's how fumbles look when you're a little kid and you're learning what a fumble is. Like, if you had to teach a little kid what is a fumble, if he's 3 years old, you would start right there and say, well, if man's holding the ball, man drops the ball.
Just forgot he had it, apparently.
Yeah, it's too bad, because that's a bad loss for San Diego. And really, New Orleans, I hate to, like, say something negative about a team that gets a road victory, but I'm not optimistic. Like, I don't think this is going to turn around their season by any means. That's the defense. It did get more aggressive in the second half, though, to their credit. They were Dennis Allen. There's another guy trying to figure out what he has, and I don't blame him. He's playing a bunch of undrafted backups at linebacker and especially in the secondary now. They're replacing guys, and they were going very vanilla cover two, cover three in the first half. They got torched, so they changed it up a little bit more matchup-oriented in the second half, and that worked for them. That was a nice piece of coaching by Dennis Allen in the middle of that game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a little bit of positivity as we keep the negative vibes going on topic eight. AFC South, I think it's really time to talk about relegation for the AFC South. I don't think there are any playoff teams in this division anymore now that you have no JJ Watt in Houston, and they faced each other. It was Titans Texans today, and obviously out in London you had the Colts and the Jaguars, and these were two really bad games, just bad mistake
filled. The Colts Jags was a good game. It was a fun
game. It was a close game.
You don't think it was very well played?
I don't think it was very well played. I think Blake Bortles, I think they might have figured something out with Blake Bortles when they started to sort of let him run around a little bit more and do stuff outside the pocket and sort of gave up on him, doing some of the things he did better last year. But, they gave up, what was that, Dorsett? They're protecting a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter and they give up a 64-yard touchdown pass?
Well, because Jalen Ramsey was misreading that corner route from the slot out of cover three there. So Jalen Ramsey has the furthest outside receiver, and he has to run as deep as he has. However deep that outside receiver goes, that's how deep Ramsey goes. And early in the game, they didn't show it. They didn't have the same replay angle. It's on TV. But early in the game, there was a play where Andrew Luck threw the corner route to Hilton on that and went to his helmet, put his hands on his helmet like, oh, what did I do? Because I think he realized that Ramsey had jumped that corner route, which meant Ramsey's vertical route was uncovered. And sure enough, they go late in the game, and there's a corner route again, and this time Ramsey uncovers, and it's Dorsett for 64-yard touchdown. That it was certainly the same concept. It may have been the same play call. But the problem, to answer your question, I know it was kind of rhetorical, but it was Jalen Ramsey today, and he's a very good cornerback. He is a unique talent. I think he's going to be a sensational player, but he was very undisciplined, and he paid a dear price for it late in that game.
Well, the Jaguars won.
They still won.
So that was, and if I had the confidence in my convictions, I would have written in my column that published Saturday night that the Jaguars were going to win the AFC South. because I am now saying officially I think the Jaguars are going to win the AFC South.
You do.
Probably with like a 5-11 record or something. But,
we said this last year, too. We thought that would happen in the AFC South, and I think Houston wound up going 9-7. So maybe. The thing is, these teams, these AFC South teams get to play the other AFC South teams. That's what we kind of forget. So someone wins these games.
Today. If you watch these games today, you can't forget it.
Yeah. They had some big plays on offense there in Jacksonville, but they were more about negative. Like, I'm thinking about the Hurns play. Allen Hurns, who really hasn't had a great season for the Jags yet, hit 42-yard touchdown. He had the missed tackle by Melvin. I think this, I'm with you, Gary. I think this was another case of kind of more, the game was lost more than won by one team. I think the Colts have some issues on defense. We know they do because they're playing 1,000 different guys still, and that's not to keep everybody fresh. That's because they don't know who fits in what personnel package yet because too many guys have weaknesses.
Yep. And then in the other AFC South matchup, Marcus Mariota continues to sort of sludge through the 2016 season. Exotic Smash Mouth is neither Exotic nor Smash Mouth. It's a little bit Smash Mouth. DeMarco Murray looks a little bit better, but I don't know if you caught this one at all, Andy. And it wasn't it wasn't a great game either, as you might have picked up from my sort of lead up to it. But this game, the winning touchdown in this game was Will Fuller's punt return, and it looked like. And I can't say this for sure, but it looked like the Titans might have forgotten that you can run a punt back. Like a guy catches it on the other end and he can run it back at you because there was like no one in the TV screen. And then Will Fuller just went, he just sort of ran on a little bit to the left. And then pretty much he was untouched on the entire return. He's also faster than everyone, but
yeah, he's a fast guy. So Houston goes to 3-1. And that's a commanding lead in that division then at this point.
It is.
I don't think, and this is too, I know we're going to move on to our lightning round in a second, so this is probably too like bold of a statement, and I'm not trying to be bold, but I'll just say it. I don't think Mariota fits Mike Mularkey's offense, and that's not a Mariota problem, by the way. I understand why Mularkey is playing the way he is. I kind of understand it. They've got Murray. They drafted Henry. That's their identity. They're not very fast at wide receiver. They're painfully slow at wide receiver, which makes them easy to defend. David Amerson learned that in week 3. He was sitting on every route they threw in his direction. That's not how you're supposed to play. Mariota's he's a pocket QB. He can be that, but you still spread out and let him move a little bit, let him see the field, rely on him. He's not Sean Hill.
Yeah. He is now.
Oh, yeah, too bad. That's not good. That's going to end badly. That's not going to go this way for long.
It was disappointing, and this guy's not a savior by any means, but when they traded Doriel Green Beckham, and trade in the loosest sense, because they got back basically a sixth offensive lineman. But Green Beckham was the one guy who was a potential, automatic mismatch. Just, someone who concerns you with his athleticism, and they don't have anyone like that now.
They don't. And Green Beckham, by the way, it's not they didn't play this week, but against Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, he was a big difference maker just in the way they used him. They're building their formations around him there now, and I think he's going to be a guy we talk about a lot late in the season for the Eagles.
Yep. Well, let's move on to topic 9, the lightning round, or as I like to call it, the fastest 2.5 hours in football. There we got Andy. Do you want to go first this week? Do you want me to go first? What do you want to do?
You got to go first this week.
Okay. Well, I'll start since we talked about the 66-yard pass interference call on Nevin Lawson last week. We had a 50-yarder this week. This was Jordan Poyer on DeSean Jackson. Weirdly enough, it was not as ridiculous as the Lawson penalty last week, which is basically two guys, the receiver not having a chance to catch the ball, and their feet got tangled and give him 66 yards. But this was Joe Hayden actually grabbed DeSean Jackson as he ran by. Hayden was beat on the double move, and then later in the pattern is when they got the pass interference and Poyer came over. Actually, he got there, and the ball ended up hitting him in the chest, but he made contact before he turned around. But I still say defensive pass interference, one. defensive pass interference, too. Two is the big one. It has to be. It has to have some form of guy clearly not playing the ball, and it is reviewable. All cases are reviewable.
No. All right, yes. My lightning back to you. I'm just going to react to your lightnings because someone has to make this quick anyway. Because I've always, you know how I feel about lightning round. We're not actually fast. No, you're wrong on that idea, and the reason why is because the impact of a slight pass interference can have the same exact impact as an egregious one, and that is you prevented the receiver from catching the ball by using bad technique on defense, unfair, unjust technique. Whether you nudge the guy illegally or grab him illegally, the result's the same. He didn't catch it. So why would the nudge be worth only 15 yards and the grab be worth 50? That's like saying, well, on offensive holding, they should only call it 5 yards if he grabs the jersey a little bit, but if he bear hugs the pass rusher, then it's 10 yards. We don't need to be diversifying these penalties at all.
So then just draw the line, like the hand-fighting penalties or like the Lawson call last week, draw the line there. Make it very, you know, the mutual hand-fighting stuff that gets called. Just call that one. Call most of them, too. That's fine. But this the 66-yarder last week, the 50-yard, that's 3 personal fouls plus 5 yards. That's too much. That's too much penalty.
Then maybe because it's such a big swing, Joe Hayden should really focus on not getting beat on double moves next time.
It was, you know, Poyer's getting ripped for it. Hayden was the one who was beaten. Hayden just reached out and grabbed Jackson on the way by. And everyone just sort of forgot about that. I do want to talk about one more officiating thing because it's becoming like a weekly occurrence now, and it's kind of funny, but at the end of Cowboys 49ers, there was a Cowboys are trying to run out the clock. They ran a little bubble screen to Cole Beasley. Nice play, ends up going for like 40 yards. Flag thrown on it, and they show the replay, and Jason Witten has held someone on the play. And it's not the most egregious hold in the history of football, but
it's a 5-yard hold. It should be a 5-yard hold. I get you.
No, what I'm going to say is, and I've got other stuff on holding. I got a whole manifesto that I'm going to read at 345 Park Avenue.
And I, by the way, I love you that you saved all this for the lightning round. That just fits not at all.
It's lightning. It's lightning, Andy. It's going so quick. But they picked up the flag on Witten. That's the second straight week that Witten has held someone. And there's been a conversation, and they picked up the flag because Jason Witten, this is like pickup basketball for him. He gets to call like his own fouls.
He's been around that long. When we did the film room thing with him, I broke down one of his holding fouls with him.
Yeah,
and we went over his technique. And on that play, it was against the Eagles 2 years ago. He turned and looked at the ref as the play was still going on, and we agreed that was not a veteran play. That was a rookie play, and he did not get that one picked up. So Witten has worked on this idea of negotiating his way out of fouls, pick up basketball. I like that. I didn't see this one, but the one last week he was right about. That was not a hold. He was correct on that one.
I think it was enough of a hold that you don't pick up the flag at that point.
Yeah. Everybody else saw it differently, including Jason Witten.
I wouldn't say everybody else saw it differently.
Are we out of lightning, or do you have any more of these things?
No, we're not. We have a couple more. Bummer lightning round item from that same Cowboys Niners game. Navarro Bowman non-contact injury, and they're thinking ruptured Achilles at this point, which is certainly terrible news.
Yeah, hold your breath for him and wish the best. He's had a good season too. He's looked very, very good. He's looked like Navarro Bowman again.
Yeah, it was not cool when he just in the middle of the play, he just collapsed. Jets Seahawks, Brandon Marshall versus Richard Sherman was entertaining as long as you didn't have to watch the constant politicking with the officials after every play. But physical matchup. Marshall won a couple of plays. You know, they went after him kind of like Fitz used to go after Sherman with Stevie Johnson the one time they played them. And got crushed, but Stevie Johnson got the better Richard Sherman that day. And I just wanted to pump up the Bills one more time.
Sherman's quietly having a very solid season. He's gotten a lot quieter over the year. Like, he's not as vocal as he used to be. I think the contract and Super Bowl rings may have a way of doing that. And he's older. He's more mature, I'm sure.
Yep.
He's still a very good, he's an elite first-class cornerback. Let's just make sure we're all on the same page with that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Bears won. The Bears won. That's a lightning one. The Bears won.
There we go. Good. I like it.
Bears beat the Lions.
They played at home, and I got to watch this film, which means the first time this year I have to fully do a Soldier Field home game film. And people who watch film know what a hassle that is. The camera angle's horrendous.
Huh?
Horrendous. My charter won't even do the Bears games for me anymore. My game charter takes too long.
All right.
Lightning.
Lightning round. That was it. We got it in less than two hours.
It took way too long. Now we're doing awards.
Topic 10, awards. Andy, who is your offensive player of the week?
My offensive player of the week. Boy. It's got to be Julio Jones, right?
Yeah.
I didn't see every snap of that, but I don't feel like I need to.
Yeah. Ben Roethlisberger was also very good, but yeah, Julio Jones. Can I tell you a long, meandering Julio Jones story, as long as we're at it? And I should have told this for the lightning round. It would have been perfect for that.
Is this a true thing?
It is a true thing. So Julio Jones, when I worked at Sports Illustrated Kids, this had to be like a decade ago now. Julio Jones was in our magazine when he was a senior in high school, and he was actually in as a track star. And it was like, at the bottom of his bio, it was like, he's also getting interest as like a football wide receiver or whatever. And so the picture of Julio Jones, he was a high jumper. He was a very good high jumper. And, you know, the Fosbury flop when you go over the bar with your back facing the ground and, you know, contort your body to go over it like that. So we had this picture of Julio Jones, and when you get someone in, you know, in frame and freeze it, sometimes your shorts make strange shapes. So we all stood over this picture and decided whether or not we could run it because it looked like Julio Jones really, really, really likes high jumping.
And did you guys run it?
We did run it. And Ted Keith, who's now a wonderful baseball editor at Sports Illustrated, his team name that year in fantasy football was Julio Jones's Questionable Billow.
Oh, all right. And this guy, this Julio Jones at the time, was a high school, an amateur athlete.
Yes.
Probably underage even. Probably a child in the eyes of the law. And you guys all did this and named your fantasy teams after him and everything.
He was a senior. He was good. It was all right, Andy.
All right.
We put it past legal. It was all good.
I'm going to change my offensive, because Julio's an obvious one. I assume that's your offensive player this week, too. Is that?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go, and he already got featured much better than I can do here by Collinsworth on Sunday night, but B.J. Finney, the fill-in left guard for the Steelers, did a very nice job, and you almost never see that. Whenever there's a backup lineman in, backup linemen look more like backups than any backups at any other positions, and that was not the case there with Finney. He did a good job at left guard for the Steelers.
Nice. Good. That's a good one. Who's your defensive player of the week?
I'm going to go with Sean Smith, cornerback for the Raiders. And I'll throw David Amerson in there as well. He was better last week, but I think and they got beat a little bit late in the game, but those corners overall for Oakland have been playing a lot better, especially within the context of their scheme. They've been a lot more physical, and they've been better. They've been very good at the top of routes lately. So I'm going to go Sean Smith, a guy who got benched in week one. He's bounced back well.
Nice story. I'm just going to go Aaron Donald. 1.5 sack. Should have been 2 full. The last one was really his. Huge strip sack of Carson Palmer when the Cardinals were within scoring range. And he just sort of wrecked that game a couple of times. So Aaron Donald is my guy. Do you want me to go special teams player of the week first?
Well, no, because here's what I'm going to get mine out of the way. I'm going to trade mine in for another defensive player of the week, because as soon as you said Donald, I thought, why in the world did I not think of Khalil Mack, who had the similar type of game? He got his first sack of the year, but that's misleading because that makes it sound like he hasn't been productive. He was absolutely dominant. They had backups James Hurst in there and their backup guard Ryan Jensen in Baltimore. And So they had some trouble there. They couldn't block him, though. He owned that game. And he's been he's been a fine player all year long still.
Yep.
That's my special teams player of the week, Khalil Mack on defense. Now, who's
that's
yours?
Your special defensive player of the week.
Correct. That nobody knows.
I'll give it to Andre Roberts, 85-yard punt return touchdown. Nice little return that kept the Lions in the game against the Bears, which we didn't talk about a whole lot. But
that's because it was in the lightning round, fortunately.
It was. Coach of the Week, do you want to go first with Coach of the Week, or should I?
You go ahead.
All right, I'll give it to Kyle Shanahan. Kind of an achievement award between the 2 weeks, but obviously the Falcons lighting up the Panthers defense. That's worth it. Kyle Shanahan turning it around with Matt Ryan. Good for him.
I'll go Mike Tomlin. I love the stories they shared in the Sunday night game about how Tomlin had the team sit and watch the film together of the Eagles' loss, and we're going to do this all as one unit, and everyone's going to own up to this, because so many times the coaches burn the game film, and you know that's a solution too. But in this case, I think Tomlin handled things well, and it was reflected in the game. To come out and dominate an opponent on national TV the week after you got embarrassed, that's quite a turnaround, and that shows that the players listened to the powers that be there in Pittsburgh.
All right. Nice one, Andy. That's nice work.
Well, I understand coaching. It's, you know, special teams. We go over this every week. I don't know special teams.
All right. Well, with that, that's a show. Thanks to our researcher, Jeff Irwin, and to the folks at Digital Media who always make us sound so much better than we actually do. Thank you for listening to this episode of the MMQB Podcast, and we'd like to thank our sponsor, MyBookie.net. Please, please, please support them the way they support our show. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys next week.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.